Today is Tuesday, February 2nd, and you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Junior Dwarfo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, world leaders condemn Myanmar military coup.
President Joe Biden said the United States would now need to review its decision to lift sanctions on Myanmar.
Also ahead, Democrats file a joint $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill.
With the Senate split 50-50 and Vice President Kamala Harris wielding the tie-breaking vote, Democrats could sidestep a 60-vote threshold.
Plus, DRC president forms new coalition. These stories and more are next. Our top story today is in the Myanmar. Hundreds of members of Myanmar's parliament remain confined inside their government housing in the country's capital a day after the military staged a coup and detained senior politicians, including Nobel laureate and de facto government leader Aung San Suu Kyi. The takeover came the morning lawmakers from all over the country had gathered in the capital for the opening of a new parliamentary session and follows days of worry that a coup was coming. One of the lawmakers said Tuesday that he and other parliament members were able to speak with one another inside the compound and communicate with their constituencies by phone, but were not allowed to leave. The declaration of a year-long state of emergency is drawing immediate condemnation from Western leaders. VOA's Margaret Bashir reports.
The power grab took place following days of tension between Myanmar's military, the Tatmadaw, and the ruling National League for Democracy, which won the November elections. The Tatmadaw has refused to accept the results, alleging massive election fraud, and declared a one-year state of emergency in the struggling democracy. In Washington, President Joe Biden said the United States would now need to review its decision to lift sanctions on Myanmar. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
The United States, I should say, removed sanctions on Burma over the past decade based on progress toward democracy. The reversal of that progress will necessitate an immediate review of our sanctions laws and authorities, followed by appropriate action.
China, which is heavily invested in Myanmar and close to the military there, merely noted events and urged the parties to appropriately resolve their differences. Regional bloc ASEAN called on the parties to pursue dialogue, reconciliation, and the return to normalcy. Some Asia watchers say the military power grab will be an early test for the Biden administration. Gregory Poling, a senior fellow for Southeast Asia at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, said the military's power grab will be an early test for the Biden administration.
The Biden team is going to have to figure out how to calibrate its engagement with Asia, with its preference for democracy and the need to put values and democracy back at the center of foreign policy. But the Biden team is also going to have to come to grips with the fact that it has very little leverage in Myanmar.
At the United Nations, Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the detention of Myanmar political leaders is a serious blow to democratic reforms, and he urged the military to respect the election outcome. UN spokesman Stéphane Dujarric.
The Secretary General stresses that the November 8th general election provides a strong mandate for the National League for Democracy, reflecting the clear will of the people of Myanmar to continue on their hard-won path to democratic reform.
The UN Special Rapporteur on Myanmar, Tom Andrews, said democracy has been overturned by the generals.
Well, it is. It's just outrageous. It's deeply disturbing.
European Union Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell strongly condemned the military intervention on Twitter and called for the immediate release of those detained and the results of the election to be respected, as did British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. The UN Security Council will meet privately on Tuesday to discuss the evolving situation. Margaret Bashir, VOA News.
A few dozen protesters gathered at the United Nations building in Bangkok on Tuesday to demonstrate against the recent military coup in Myanmar. Protesters stood clenching Myanmar's National League for Democratic Party flags and portraits of detained State Councillor Aung San Suu Kyi. The United Nations also fears that the military's action will also worsen the plight of some 600,000 Rohingya Muslims still in the country. To get a complete picture of where things stand, International Edition's Steve Miller spoke with VOA's Burmese service chief, Than Luyng Tun.
Yes, we believe that Aung San Suu Kyi and President Win Myint, they are under house arrest in APO, we believe that, together with other key member of the cabinet there. But also, there's a chief minister of the state and divisions, altogether 14 of them. They've been taken, so they are not under house arrest. They've been taken to somewhere. But the problem is that since the military didn't release any kind of statement about who they have arrested or now who has where about they are or their situation, there's no clear announcement came out. So the only thing is what we know is that, you know, for the state and division, chief ministers are taken from their home, they've been arrested, and of course, there's no, we don't hear anything from the NLD leadership and all the cabinet members. At the same time, you know, those elected parliamentarians who gather at Naypyidaw to start that new sections of the parliament, all of them were being rounded up or prevented from the way they were they've been staying in Naypyidaw, nearly 300 of them, I think. So they are not allowed to get out. And we heard that they will be, I think, taken to somewhere. We don't know yet.
Luyng, can you kind of walk us through how the military was able to take control of the country?
Yeah, this is a kind of a strange situation. You know that military has been talking a lot about, or they have a pledge. They are pledged to defend the country constitution. So they always claim that they will defend the constitution, and then they will move or according to the law, current constitutions provided. People believe that taking military power, taking power is staging the military coup is against the constitution anyway. But the strange Burmese constitution provided a clause that the president himself think of the country is an emergency situation and it is out of control. The president can request to, through that the Security Council and ask Commander-in-Chief to take the power. So this is a situation the military is creating. So instead of the military taking direct, making kind of a direct coup, somehow one of the vice presidents make himself as a temporary president. And then he called Security Council meeting, and then he transferred power to the commander-in-chief, that all the power of the country. So, and also he declared 1 year of the national emergency period. And at the time, what he was saying is that the military wants to oversee that the process of the independent investigations process to check that or to investigate election fraud, so-called election fraud, which they claim.
Speaking of the allegations that the military has raised about last year's election, what does the Election Commission say about those allegations? And for that matter, what do domestic and international elections observers say about the way that the elections were handled?
Yeah, there's election is in November, 8 November, is of course, it is quite free and fair according to the internal domestic observer and international observer. But from the beginning, there's some problem about voter registration process. So when that election commissions declare or announce that register voter list, there's been a lot of irregularities. And then there's a no attempt to, at the time, to what I call correct. So when that election actually happening, so the opposition parties and the army itself found that there's a lot of what I call illegal voting, what I call patterns. So they have been checking all those township and constituency, and they released what they found. So according to the military, they out of 37 million eligible voter, there might be about more than 10 million election fraud and illegal voting patterns, illegal. So they want election commission to investigate. This is what they have been calling. But the election commission was saying that, no, it has been done. So they rejected a military claim to look at the situation. And then they just simply let that winning party go ahead to call for the new parliament and possibly founding the new government.
Tan Lu, in turn, is the chief of the VOA Burmese service. He was speaking with my colleague, Steve Miller. Top Democrats in the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives filed a joint $1.9 trillion budget measure on Monday in a step towards bypassing Republicans on COVID-19 relief, even as President Joe Biden met with Republican senators who said they would press forward on a compromise effort. Reuters' Brian Wood reports.
Democrats in U.S. Congress filed a joint $1.9 trillion budget measure on Monday in a step toward bypassing Republicans on COVID-19 relief. That was just before President Joe Biden met with Republican senators Monday night at the White House. GOP Senator Susan Collins described the discussion as, quote, frank and useful, but told reporters there had been no breakthrough on a bipartisan bill.
I wouldn't say that we came together on a package tonight. No one expected that in a two-hour meeting. But what we did agree to do is to follow up and talk further at the staff level and amongst ourselves and with the president and vice president on how we can continue to work together on this very important issue.
While the president has voiced a willingness to work with Republicans on a compromise effort, the White House has said they, quote, will not settle for a package that fails to meet the moment. Before the meeting, the top two Democrats in Congress, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, laid the groundwork for bypassing Republicans on COVID-19 relief, filing a joint budget measure with the Biden-proposed price tag. With the Senate split 50-50 and Vice President Kamala Harris wielding the tie-breaking vote, Democrats could sidestep a 60-vote threshold and enact the coronavirus legislation with a simple majority in a procedure called reconciliation. If deployed, it would be the first flex by Democrats since winning razor-thin control of the Senate. For the Republicans, their proposed plan offers no assistance to state and local governments, one of the items that a Biden advisor described as a must-have. It also offers stimulus checks starting at $1,000, less than the $1,400 checks sought by Biden, and totals less than a third of the $1.9 trillion package.
That was Brian Woods from Reuters. The U.S. Senate is poised to approve Pete Buttigieg to be the transportation secretary, the first openly gay person ever confirmed to a cabinet post, AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
Buttigieg's nomination is set for a vote today. The 39-year-old former mayor of South Bend, Indiana, and President Biden's one-time rival in the Democratic primaries, received bipartisan praise at his confirmation hearing. As transportation secretary, Buttigieg would undertake Biden's wide-ranging agenda of rebuilding the nation's infrastructure, as well as fighting climate change by helping to oversee stronger automotive fuel economy standards to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and support the president's push later this year on a sweeping $2 trillion climate and infrastructure plan. I'm Julie Walker.
President Biden's administration has already deported hundreds of immigrants in recent days, despite a campaign pledge to limit removals. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
President Biden had announced a 100-day moratorium on deportations. That was rejected by a federal judge who said it couldn't be enforced, but also didn't require the deportations be scheduled. Last week, ICE sent about 270 people back to Guatemala and Honduras and 15 to Jamaica. It's unclear if any were national security or public safety threats, or how many may have been expelled under a Trump administration public health order because of the pandemic. Immigrants advocates are concerned, and two legal experts tell the Associated Press ICE could have just released the migrants with deportation orders, kept them in detention, or delayed sending them out of the country. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
This is the Voice of America. An out-of-control wildfire has destroyed at least 56 homes and threatens more near the Australian city of Perth. Many residents have been told it is too late to leave. Others were warned that if they stay in their homes, they should be prepared to fight the fire themselves. Afghan officials say at least two people were killed in a separate bomb explosion in the capital of Kabul, including a prominent cleric who headed an Islamic nonprofit organization. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani denounced the killings of the cleric as a, quote, terrorist attack on the dignity and bright future of Afghanistan, unquote. Pakistan's Supreme Court has ordered a Pakistani-British man acquitted of the 2002 gruesome beheading of American journalist Daniel Pearl off death row and moved to a so-called government safe house. Ahmed Sahid Omar Sheikh, who has been on death row for 18 years, will be under guard and won't be allowed to leave the safe house. You are listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. It's been more than 8 months since the death of George Floyd in police custody sparked widespread protests across the U.S. While the protests have lessened significantly nationwide, in Washington, D.C., activists are renewing their calls to end racism and police brutality. VOA's Jason Patinkin reports.
The return of a familiar sound in Washington, D.C., protesters demanding racial justice. After a tumultuous 2020 when protests like this one took place nearly every weekend, a march over the last weekend of January was the first of its kind in Washington in 2021. It's also the first since Democrat Joe Biden became president. Biden has promised to help heal the nation's racial wounds and appointed the most diverse cabinet in American history. But one protester who declined to give her name due to fear of police retaliation said they will continue to demand change regardless of who is president.
Like, no matter who's in the White House, whether it's Trump, whether it's Biden, whether it's Nancy Pelosi, whether it's my mother, the system is still the same. It's like it's not just an individual person. This didn't start because Donald Trump was in the White House. It started because cops were killing black people. And cops were killing black people before Donald Trump, and they're going to kill black people after Donald Trump.
Before marching, the protesters held an orientation for white activists about how to participate in the movement.
Example number one, gaslighting. Does anybody know what gaslighting is?
After that, demonstrators read the names of black people recently killed by police in the U.S.
Xavier Hill is an 18-year-old black man from Charlottesville, Virginia. Xavier was shot three times and killed by Virginia State Troopers on I-64 in Goachland County 3 weeks ago.
Then the march began.
It's a revolution!
The protesters unfurled a banner calling for the abolition of police, immigration enforcement authorities, and prisons. One protester carried a black, red, and white anti-fascist flag. The marchers blocked traffic as they walked, undeterred by near-freezing temperatures. There were around 60 protesters at the start of the night, much fewer than in the height of George Floyd protests last June, when tens of thousands took to the streets in Washington. But another protester, who also declined to give his name, said just because time has passed doesn't mean the issue has gone away.
Has his family got justice for his life yet? And it's not just one case, it's like this is a systemic issue. And we all have our duty to do to make the change where we're at so that it doesn't happen again and again and again and again.
As the march started, there were a dozen police vehicles along with 20 officers riding bicycles present. After about an hour, the demonstration reached a row of bars and restaurants, which in the past have given space to protesters to rest. But this time, the police formed a line along the street to block the marchers. The atmosphere turned tense. Across the street, officers began shoving some activists who refused to budge from a sidewalk. One protester, who called herself Beyonce, accused the police of being heavy-handed with them while not doing enough to confront far-right marchers who rallied in Washington in November and December and during the storming of the Capitol building on January 6th. In those cases, violence broke out and police were criticized for being slow to react.
It would have been nice had all these cops been out at the Capitol on the 6th. Hell, even on December 12th when they came previously, or even again on November 14th when the Proud Boys had come previously and ransacked the city. So Maybe had they given this response to them back in November, December, January 6th wouldn't have happened.
The protesters say they will keep marching each weekend in Washington until their demands are met. Jason Patinkin, VOA News, Washington.
Democratic Republic of Congo President Felix Tshisekedi has formed a new political alliance known as the Sacred Union following the removal of Prime Minister Sylvester Ilunga Ilukamba. However, political analysts say he will find it difficult to juggle the diverging interests of his coalition of 20 groups, further raising political tension in the country. For more, I reach Dr. Noel Tsiani, former presidential candidate and leader of the Force of Change political group.
That President Tshisekedi is taking the control of the institution because it was very clear that President Kabila did not show goodwill in the sense that he was blocking his successor from taking control of the institution and managing the country the way it should be. Every single decision that President Tshisekedi had to take, he had to go and negotiate with President Kabila, who did not even want to move forward, who blocked almost every single thing. So the majority of the Congolese people are happy today that President Tshisekedi has freed himself from that control that he was under from President Kabila. And therefore, we do hope that in the future, the government which is going to be put in place will be a government accountable to the president and will be implementing the president's vision so that the people of the Congo can benefit from the natural resources of the country.
What about the influence of the former president who ruled DRC for so many years? Are you saying his influence is on the decline?
His influence has diminished very substantially. Remember that he had the control of the National Assembly. He claimed to control the National Assembly, but when the National Assembly was put to a test, the president of the National Assembly, who came from Kabila's side, was dismissed. Now the prime minister, who came from Kabila's side, was dismissed, which means that the influence that President Kabila hoped to have had on the government institution was just fictitious. The majority he had in parliament was fictitious because when they asked every single parliamentarian to choose his camp, it looks like the majority of the parliamentarians have chosen to be with President Tshisekedi than with President Kabila. So I believe that Kabila has lost control of this institution and Tshisekedi is now in charge.
What are the chances that these two men will work together peacefully instead of what people are terming a messy political divorce?
Well, you know that President Kabila has led this country, has governed this country over 18 years. And what result has he achieved? Today, Congo, despite the abundance of natural resources, is one of the poorest countries in the world, which means that Kabila did not manage the country properly. The unemployment rate is about 85% of the active population. You find less than 10% of the population having access to water and electricity. And many people are dying of hunger in a country which is capable of producing enough food to feed the whole of Africa, which means that President Kabila had failed as a president.
Supporters of former President Kabila say that he did his best. At least he organized an election that led to President Tshisekedi taking power. Is that not an achievement on its own?
No. In reality, President Kabila did not organize the election because he wanted to hand over to somebody else. The election was bloody. Before having the election, he tried to change the constitution. He tried to change the electoral laws. There were many people killed on the street. I can mention a few people like Rosie Chimanga, like Therese Kapangala. There were many people, militant of UDPS, Tshisekedi's political party, were killed, burnt to death. So Kabila did not organize the election because he wanted to hand power to someone. He organized the election under pressure from the national authorities, from the population, and from the international community.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofwa in Washington. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.